ever tried watching your athlete's game from anywhere in the world? With Replayer, you actually can. I had a friend watch his son's game live from his flight. My son watched a live game from the car while we were driving up the California coast. It doesn't matter where you are, grandparents across the country, cousins on the other side of the world, teammates who just moved away, set up the camera, hit go live, and everyone with a link is right there on the sideline. Live streaming is free. Unlimited games, unlimited teams, unlimited users. No complex tiers. Everyone gets access. And forget waiting hours for footage. I recorded a 60-minute game, and it was ready in 5 minutes. Players were clipping highlights on the ride home. One camera, made in the USA, unlimited everything. If you never want to miss those moments, head to replayer.com. The link is in the show notes. Hey soccer friends, I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of TeamPlayer's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give TeamPlayer a look.
Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them.
And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order.
Hello, and welcome back to Chat by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. This is part two with Coach Smith. C. Smitty. Caleb, whatever you want to call him, he's such a great young man. So let's start this chat and head to the pitch.
So moving on with your playing time. So you played at SMU for 4 years.
Yeah, played there 4 years.
Did you start all 4 years?
I started all four years.
And how was your playing experience in college? Was it one of the best experiences of your life because you got to go to college and got to play your favorite thing, do your favorite thing, or was it a?
No, it was good. It was as it would have been. It was challenging. My first year, I started. We won the league. We went to the Sweet 16. We lost to Akron, which was probably one of the best we've ever played against. They had this guy named Richie Larea who plays for the Canadian National Team. Plays for I think Toronto FC too. But he's incredible. My freshman spring, I actually broke my fifth metatarsal, which is literally the worst bone to break because there's not a lot of blood flow that goes there. So I was actually at an indoor place, and a kid stepped on my foot really bad, and I was playing indoor. And I got home, and I couldn't even walk. I had to have my brother and my best friend carry me to the car, and I was like, I've never felt this much pain in my foot. And I went to get an MRI, or I went to the emergency room to get an MRI, whatever it's called, and I ended up breaking my fifth metatarsal. She was like 6 to 8 weeks, and she like walks out. I was like, oh, okay, 6 to 8 weeks, but it wasn't because the fifth metatarsal bone, there's not a lot of blood flow, so it takes longer. It took From the moment I got to, back to school in January up until May, I was cleared, I think, May 1st. So January to May, I didn't get surgery on it, too, because I let it heal naturally. That's what I got some second opinions from other doctors, like, yeah, you shouldn't get surgery because you could easily rupture it again and it could even be worse. I was like, now let's go ahead and just let that boy heal naturally, you know what I'm saying? So yeah, I let it heal naturally and I was out for the whole spring. And I was the first, that was my first ever, I've never gotten hurt like that ever in my life. That was my first ever big injury.
How did that mess with you psychologically as an athlete? Because you said you didn't learn the difference between you as a player until
as Caleb Smith. Yeah, right. It was hard. Yeah, I hadn't really had time to do that. But now you have all the time in the world because I'm sitting on the side. I'm sitting on the bench. I'm sitting in my crutches on the golf cart with a trainer, just watching practice because I couldn't do anything. I mean, when I was in crutches, I couldn't do any physical therapy yet. I was just sitting there, and it was like depressing, man. I went through a big depression part of my life. It was hard. Like I didn't know what was next. Like I knew I was gonna get. Healed and everything like that, but I couldn't even. I felt so helpless. I couldn't even get my own food. Right. Like, I'm on crutches. I can't pick my food up and like take it to the. I had to have people get my own food, and I felt. And one of the things about me is like I'm a very independent person when it comes to like I like to have my own things. So
right.
It's like middle child. I'm a middle child, so it's kind of middle child. So I'm very independent, and I was so helpless. I couldn't do anything about without someone else's help. And it allowed me to like have grace too in my life too, like not be so hard on myself that it's gonna get better. But at the same time, man, if you're not playing, you're just sitting there. It's like it's depressing. You know.
I can't imagine.
It was one of the hardest times of my life, definitely going through that.
So
yeah, when you always play and you're always playing, da da da, and then you're out for
5 months.
The whole spring. I mean, granted, the whole good thing I wasn't out there in the regular season, you know.
Now, did they have a spring season, SMU?
They do, but it's just like you play, it's like exhibition. You play like 5 exhibition games and you train like 5 days a week, get the weekends off. Gotcha. So it's more like preseason for the preseason.
Gotcha.
So it's like to give everyone a chance. Maybe the players who didn't play as much in the fall to like give them a chance to show their stuff. Like, no, it's like a no pressure environment. It's not for a championship or trophy, is just evaluation.
Fun.
Yeah, fun evaluation.
Now, you moved from SMU, then you went to Pittsburgh Riverhounds.
Yeah, Pittsburgh Riverhounds.
So, what league are they in?
USL Championship. So, right below MLS.
So, they're the highest USL league one.
Yeah.
Highest USL.
Highest USL, yeah. No, USL Championship is legit. Like, they got legit, like, former MLS players. They get you players from Europe now over there.
Yes. They have legit. A lot of players. Yeah. Even the USL League, too.
Oh, yeah, They had one of my one of the players I played with on the national team was named Koi Akale. He played for Tormenta in Georgia, and they won the USL League One championship I think last year. And he was on the team; he was a big part of it. But yeah, he was on the U-17 national team. Like he's in playing high level minutes there, you know. So it was hard. I mean, getting injured, and even like at the Riverhounds, I got hurt too. So it was tough.
And at the Riverhounds, what position did you play
I played outside back. So outside. I played. When I was younger, I played like attacking mid, but I really wasn't an attacking mid. I got moved back to like a number 8 or number 6, like a defensive box-to-box mid. And then since I'm a lefty, they put me as a left back. Because I also, too, as a player, for the kids, if any kids are watching or not watching, listening, you got to be versatile.
Yes.
You can't be like, I'm a number 10 and that's it. No, you need to be able to play. Because everyone wants to be a Messi. They want to play a center attacking mid, but you got to be able to, hey, we got an injury. Hey, I need you to slide here to right mid.
Right.
I need you to slide right back, actually. I need you to play center back.
And that's the conversation I think parents need to have with their players more and more. It's the best advice is that find out what you're not good at and learn how to be good at those so you're not good at everything else. Like my son, I can only use him as an example because that's my example.
Yeah, sure.
We tell him he's good at everything but goalie.
Yeah.
And someone goes, you need to let him play goalie. It's not the same position. It's not. I go, he doesn't care if a ball goes by him. I go, I flat out ask him. I go, do you care if a goal ever happens? He goes, no. He goes, I go, what is it more important? He goes, playing soccer. I'm like, okay, you're not a goalie mentality.
Yeah.
And he just wants to play soccer. So he can play any position you put him in, even goalie. But we tell him, like, you don't volunteer to play goalie because your team will lose because you don't care.
Yeah, exactly.
If the ball goes by,
That's like literally soccer where you need to, like that's how goals are scored. You know, you need to protect it. But also, I think too, kids need to be like, and this is for kids who like want to play high level. You got to be like really good at something though. Either you're a really good dribbler, you're a really good passer, you're really good like on a half turn, you're really good defending 1v1. Like you got to have not like you're really good at one thing and you're bad at everything else, but something needs to stand out. Like you need to have like a special skill set. Like, when I think of Kevin De Bruyne playing for Man City, like, I think about his, like, crossing ability, his technical passing ability. He's one of the best in the world. And that's why he's one of the best in the world. It's because he's known for that. Like, you got to be known for something you could do something at a really high level to stand out. Because, like, you're going to have to, like, I say, when you go pro, everybody's really good. How are you going to stand out from them?
Right.
You know what I mean? It's you got to have a specialty at something that maybe other people can do, but you know that 8 times out of 10, if I play left back, I'm crossing that ball into the 6-yard box every single time.
Right.
And it's going to get there, right? Like, that's how you're going to stay on the field. So it's, what are you really good at, and how do you not – because no one's perfect, but how do you – if you had 10 balls, are you knocking 8 in the top corner, 8 in the bottom corner, whatever it is?
Right.
Or making – if you're a center mid, are you – playing long balls, is that long ball getting to that person's foot 8 out of 10 times? Because that's what coaches are looking for. I remember I was on the river. I went on a trial before I signed with the team. I went on like on a invite trial, and I was playing outside back. And he was like, "If you can't cross the ball as an outside back, why would we want to sign you? That's your job. Like, if you think about it as a pro, they're paying you money to do something,
right?
Just like any. If you think about it financially, if someone were to hire you, can't do their job description, why would they pay you? You know what I mean? Like, so that's how I thought about it. I was like, he's absolutely right. If I can't cross the ball in the box, why are they going to pay me?
Right.
You know what I mean? So that's for those people who want to, even in college, like, if you play center mid and you can't complete, you know, 80% of your passes in the game, why are they going to give you a scholarship?
Right.
You got to stand out, you know? So
the conversation I had with my son's coach, I actually interviewed him, was Sonny Stevens.
Yeah.
He said, like, his job as a midfielder was to win the ball.
Yeah.
And pass it to the moneymaker
feet
because that who scores goals. They who scores goals. Absolutely. My job is to get the ball to his foot 99% of the time.
Yeah.
He goes, that's not realistic, but he goes, that was my job.
That was your job. If you break it down to employer and employee, they're paying you to do a job. And the overarching theme is you're getting wins, you're putting fans in the seats.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's what the owner's looking for. Like you said, he's getting into the moneymaker. They're coming to see you, but they're coming to see the moneymaker put the ball in the goal. And now the fan goes, well, now we want to come back. Now bring your friends to the game, too. Now they're bringing more money in. Like, you know, so.
I mean, time-wise, locally speaking, not to age, put an age on this, but it's like watching FC Dallas. We're there to watch Jesus score goals, but we're watching Bernard Camungo score goals. We're watching him receiving the ball from Jesus or Tawazi or Remema. You know how you pronounce it?
Tomasi?
I like watching him play. I don't think he gets enough credit. And him and Tafari. Tafari does a phenomenal job as a left center back. And watching these players do their roles and what they're responsible for is absolutely amazing. And now explaining that to a 9-year-old or a 10-year-old child and breaking it down, like, all they have to do is X, Y, and Z, and they will be able to play soccer for the rest of as long as they're physically capable of it.
You got to lock in on – you got to have the specialty. It's so important. Even as, like, a center back, I work a lot of my center backs on ball distribution. A lot of center – like, because if you think of a center back, you think of them – you call a center back as, like, you're 6'4", you're good in the air, you're big, you can knock people off the ball. But if you can be able to pass from the back and distribute from the back, I mean, look at Man City center backs, Ruben Diaz, John Stones. They're the best in the world because they can not only have the physique, but they're able to pass. They're able to dribble in the midfield.
Pass.
You know what I mean?
But Pep's big thing is, I want a player that can dribble the ball, that can handle the ball. We can teach him everything else.
Exactly.
If they can handle the ball
right
now, we can teach him how to be a great center back.
Yeah.
We can teach him how to be, but we can't teach them.
Correct.
Because they've missed the golden years. And that brings us to where you're at now. You're coaching kids that are from what age groups then?
Oh, man, all the way from probably 6 to all the way to high school ages.
So you're 6 to 18, let's say.
Yeah.
What would you call the golden years for learning? I mean, I have my number.
My golden years is like, I would say like 10 to like 15. I say 10 to 15.
What I was told, anything below U14.
Right.
U14 and younger. Because once they get to that age of 14, being 14, now they're learning tactics
of
the game.
Tactics, yeah.
And technical, is there or not? I mean, have these few phenom players that have came through over the decades that decided to pick up soccer at 13, 14, 16 years old and make it to the pro levels.
But it's very few.
It's few and far between. Yeah. I mean, who's the men's national team goalie? Matt Turner. He's one of the few examples.
That's a very niche thing because even goalies is a totally different skill set.
Right.
But it's still, I don't know what you're talking about.
And I think if you look at it from that perspective of, you said 10 to 14.
Yeah, around there. Like, I would, 10 to 14 I would say is like, because when you're young, you're still learning. But I think when you get to that middle school, like fifth grade to like freshman year high school, middle school, because you kind of know, like when I was like in eighth grade, I knew I had the talent. I knew I had the talent to be a pro. I was like, okay, I was good enough to go pro. But then there's a lot of factors and variables that have to go right in your favor too, like injury.
Luck.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of different factors. Connections. I mean, is your coach connected with colleges, pro players, scouts? You know, because you could be the best player, but if you're not connected with other people who can get you there, then it could be harder. Not impossible, but it could be harder to get there.
That's the conversation I've had recently. It was, yeah, you have these kids that come from Forest Hill. Does that sound right?
Yeah.
I'm not from that. I'm not. But they've never played club soccer. They've only played high school.
Yeah.
But they're great soccer players and could never afford to go play. So they go. Yeah. They try out for an amateur team, make the amateur team like it was nothing.
Yeah.
And then they get scholarships. They get they were able to get seen.
I think, and also too, I just always tell people, if you're always the top player on your team, one of the top, it's time to move on. It's time to move on. If you're always the best player, you can almost become complacent in that. If you think this is how it's always going to be, you know what I mean? I'm always going to be the best on my team, even if I move. And it may not be the case, because you could be playing, and maybe you're playing in a lower league and you're the best player, but let's go over here to the ECNL MLS next, and you have to prove the same thing you did here. And then if you do that, then yeah. Right. But, you know, you got to always look at what's next, because there's always a new – I always say, like, some kid is the best on a team, I said, hey, you may want to look at moving them to challenging them, you know? And obviously it has to be fit, and the coaches kind of have – it kind of has to be like we want you to – the coach, like, oh, we want you on our team, because you can go to a team, you can be really good, but if the coach doesn't see a fit for you too – you could be just another player on the team, you know. Right. So it's kind of hard, but I always want people to be challenged.
And that's, you know? That is key, because I feel like kids that aren't put either outgrow your. We always say either Landon will either outgrow his team or the team will outgrow him.
Correct. Yeah.
And it's not a bad thing the team outgrows him, because that's not the right environment for him to grow in. It's finding that right environment, and that's the conversation we always talk about with clubs. It's finding the right coach for your player, it's always a fit thing, because Landon can now play for coaches that are a little bit more aggressive speaking to him, but he won't be disrespected. Like, he's learned now, like, there's a line,
a fine 100%. Line
for him.
Yeah.
And, but another kid might accelerate underneath that. And, but
yeah, no, I know what you mean. I'm big on respect, man. Like, I'm big on, like, you give me respect, I give you respect. I'm never going to disrespect a kid, a parent, any of that. But, like, I am hard on kids, because I think it's necessary. Especially if a kid has potential and I can see him, you know. Because, man, if you out here, college, let me tell you one thing. College is expensive, man. College is very expensive. If you can get a scholarship,
even a partial,
it could get you set you up for success. And a lot of these parents are like, why can't you want a scholarship? I say, okay, yeah, you can better work for it, you know. So, I mean, when I see kids that have potential, I'm like, look, this could change the course of your life and the rest of your family's life.
Right.
Like, really. I mean, it's changed my life, you know. I mean, I'm able to do this full time, not have any student loan debt, you know. So it's a blessing for me.
It makes it easier
because, I mean, if I had student loan debt, I would have been like, hey, I need to find a, you know, job with benefits, and you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Maybe my walk after college is a bit different, but when you work hard and it pays off, you see I'm seeing the benefits of it now, you know.
And so with your experience now, talking about the golden years, going back to that. Teaching the technical side of the game, because I was told there's three sides of the game. There's physical, technical speed, and mental speed.
Yeah.
And physical speed is for later years, because
it's
after puberty.
It's DNA. That's right. DNA driven. You can't control the DNA.
Right. And I was told, like, you don't worry about that. And I read that recently. It was, don't worry about physical speed until after puberty, because it all changes.
Yeah, 100%.
And then technical speed and mental speed. You can be the slowest person on the field and be the most influential.
Think about Andre Pirlo. You know, you ever heard Andre Pirlo? He used to play for center mid. He used to play for Italy. Would trot around. I mean, he wasn't slow, but he wasn't fast. But he had probably the best ping I've ever seen. Like, he would get a ball here. The guy was on that third base, second base over there. He'd ping it right to his foot every time. I mean, he had the technical ability. So it overrides the lack of. You kind of have to make up the difference. I say, if you're not as big and fast, your technique maybe has to be a little bit better than the kid who's blazing fast, because you have to make up for it.
I think of Messi. Messi is a fluke of an example to use.
Oh,
but
yeah.
His physical speed
versus
his mental and technical speed
is
different. I mean, the man doesn't – it's what they have joked since he's been in the MLS. His stats are sad because of how fast he is on the field.
Yeah.
But the influence he makes with his great first touch say his second touch, the pass, or his dribbling speed, or his technique on the ball, and how spatially aware he is of everything, is the opposite. And this is, you advise parents during these golden years to harp more on the mental speed or the technical speed versus each other. I mean, it's because I feel like mental speed can still be taught, but technical has like to be said, ingrained.
I always teach with any player that comes to me. I always do technical work. I mean, that's the meat and potatoes of soccer. The core of soccer is technique, passing, dribbling, receiving a ball. I mean, I think the most important thing in soccer is a first touch. That's what I always tell kids. Because if you don't, like I say, if you don't have a good first touch, you won't have a second one or a third one. So I always say, like, if you can have a player, if someone fires the ball as hard as they can to your foot, are you able to keep it within I call it like a soccer bubble. Like there's a bubble around it. And if that ball gets outside the bubble, here comes the defender. And even too, if a defender sees you that has a bad first touch, they're going to close you down a lot quicker. But if they see, like, when I was a defender, I always respected the best players because I know if I get too tight and they're really good, they're going to flick it over my head, flick it between my legs.
Right.
So I respect them. I give them a little space. So that's why I say if you have a good first touch, defenders are not going to, you know, charge you so fast. But if you don't, then be ready to get, you know, clotheslined, you know, getting the 50-50 challenge because they're gonna see that and they're going to press you harder. But I always say first touch is everything. And then obviously from that, like, speed of play, passing. I think they'll always say you in the game is more passing than there are shots on goal. So you got to be able to pass and distribute at a high level.
Right.
Always.
Talk about first touch. Patty had a quote that I love saying to my son. It's a bad first touch will lead to a bad pass, which will lead to another bad pass, which will lead to a turnover, which will lead to a goal.
Yeah.
And nice. I'm like, that's a long sentence, but the message is get that first touch down.
I always fireball hard at people's foot and make them like control it. A cushion on their foot. I mean, because you got to have that in order to be successful. It's so important.
And I've never thought about it, that first touch. My son was with his private lesson, and in his private lesson, he goes, relax your ankle. Stop locking it. Yeah. I'm like, what in the world? So I was out there passing with him. Later that day, he was setting something up, and I'm like, Landon, pass me the ball. And I took the ball, and I'm like, okay, I see what he's saying. It's like
if you
lock your ankle, that ball's going to go flying the other direction.
Like, you got to let the ball come into you, and you kind of have to slowly let it stop like on your foot.
Right. I understood like absorbing it, like pulling your foot back, but not locking your ankle did not make sense to me until I actually physically did it.
Because
I understood like it's like catching a baseball. You don't just grab it, let's reach for it. You let it come into your glove and you absorb it. It's the same thing. And that's how I've slightly stopped it. I never thought about unlocking your ankle. So when the ball hits your ankle buckles a little bit. And then I'm like, oh my God. And it's listening to that. So during those golden years, you talk about working heavily on technical. Do you work more on, I'm very much a, very basic, like you don't need all the flashy tools, you don't need the rebounders, you don't need the mannequins out there, cones and coaching sticks.
What I use. Some of my clients have it already at their disposal. I use it sometimes, but I'm a very simple trainer. Like I do a lot of change of direction. So if I have a center mid, I'll do a lot of half turns. I'll do a lot of receiving in space and driving forward. I'll do a lot of half turns and passes, receiving one foot, passing with the opposite foot. If I have a winger, then we do more, like I'll have set cones on the outside. We'll do like maybe cutting on an inverted winger, cutting on your opposite foot, striking back post, that type of thing. But I make it all situational. I was like, okay, this is going to happen in the game. Not if, it will happen in the game, but when it happens, this is how you can react to it. This is how you can get out of a tight space. If someone's coming at you, how can you make your first touch in space and then dribble forward in space? How can you be on a half turn to protect the ball from the defender? So it's all situational stuff. I don't really try to get too – have like so many drills that – are so complex that it's actually counterproductive in a sense. I keep it very simple.
That's the thing. It's like, I think soccer is not a complex game.
It's not.
It's a very broken down. When it's broken down, it's very simple. It's not like there's not trickery really involved. I mean, there can be. I mean, if you watch like all these shows or TV shows, I mean, if you watch Ted Lasso, they talk about the Sandman. It's like, they talk about like all these trick plays, but. Yeah. Those trick plays are just natural occurrences in the game.
Correct. You don't really, it just happens.
It just happens. Yeah, it's like you see that your teammate is coming in for the pass. If I just step over it and let them go to them, as long as they're still outside, we're good.
Yeah, we're good. We're Gucci, yeah.
And that's the thing. It's very hard for kids to see. So when you're in one-on-one training sessions, and this is where I think there's a lot of criticism. How do you, I hear from coaches, they have a hard time understanding where coaches like yourself teach game-like scenarios when it's only two people. And how do you apply that into the one-on-one sessions? Because I'm on the other side of that fence. I think you can teach that because you can go stand off in the distance, have them bounce a ball off the rebounder, or you could pass them the ball, make them go through a cone or two and switch the ball or cross the ball.
I think it's a lot about it's how you set it up, but it's also how you explain it, like painting a picture.
Right.
So you have to paint a picture. Okay, let's say I have a left winger and I want to focus on you getting by a defender. So I'll maybe put a couple cones out that signify, hey, these are a couple defenders. This is how I want you to receive it. And then it's up to you to, whenever you're ready, you're going to touch it around the defender and you want to curl it to the back post, away from the goalie, low and hard to the back post. It's just about explaining it to the kid and them seeing it and doing it and performing it and them achieving it too. So it's about painting a picture. That's how I see it. I mean, it makes sense because it's like, okay, there's only one person here. And again, there's going to be a person here, a person here, a person here. You know what I mean? But I think if you explain it the right way and you tell them how this could work, how they could be successful at it, and them actually doing it and being successful at it in the game, it'll come. Not like I always say, it's not going to be easier in the game, but you're going to be ready for the moment when it comes.
Right.
Rather than like, oh, wait, this is what Coach Smitty said. You know what I mean? Like, you're ready. Oh, this is what he said? Okay. Blah, 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 blah. You know what I mean? So
yeah, I think I feel like IDP, or is IDP individual player development coaches.
Yeah. I was like, I thought you were talking about somebody specific. No, IDP. Yeah, that makes sense.
Coaches get a lot of short end of the sticks with crap because I feel like they're just taking advantage of families. Like, we have had a private coach for Landon since he's been six, since he started playing soccer.
Yeah.
And someone goes, why? I go, well, he's a rural kid. If he didn't understand defense, how much contact, he went from playing rec to playing club soccer, and a kid put his arm up on him and he's having a tantrum because he was told that soccer is not a non-contact sport.
Yeah.
At 6 years old, it's a little bit different than he is now 3 years later, but we hired someone to teach him how to use his body.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't understand the game well enough at the time,
but
he wanted to play at a higher level. So we hunted down someone that he made a connection with, and he had him for 3 years.
Wow, yeah.
As a private coach.
Yeah.
And he taught him how to play defense, how to use his body. And we've had multiple private coaches since then. And I think parents need to understand, like, it's not just because they need it because, oh, I have a private coach. It gets their brain thinking differently.
And there's no pressure, too.
Right.
They always say, like, if we're here, we can go as fast as we want or we can go as slow as we want.
Right.
It doesn't matter to me. I want you to get the concept down. I want you to get the idea of what we're trying to do down. But then we obviously pick up the speed once they get it down. We're not going the same speed. But
and I think that's the thing that parents don't realize as a private coach, as a individual player private coach. It's that there's different scenarios. It's like I heard a coach tell me one time, like, they're a waste of money, they're a waste of time. Maybe once a month, maybe once every 2 months or every 6 weeks. Yeah. You don't need them all the time. I'm like, I see the difference when my son doesn't have it.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I see the difference on that first touch. I see the difference on his confidence going up and playing defense.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, I have my opinion on where my son's natural ability is. He always gets playing. He's a righty, but he plays left back. He has a strong left foot for a right-footed kid.
Yeah.
He has the privilege of playing in the game as a left back.
Yeah, yeah.
But in my honest opinion, he's either a forward wing or a midfielder of some sort. And because I feel like he has a great strike on the ball, he has a great first touch to push the ball. And it's nothing against his coaches, and I respect his current coach wholeheartedly. I hope. I have in my head, I think he has a plan for Landon, and it's not to be playing left back all the time.
Yeah.
Is to have him play other positions, but he has to have someone else that can fill that role.
Yeah.
And I feel like parents get so easy to jump gun. I think of Colleen Acosta is a great example.
Colleen's a goat, man.
And he played everything.
Yeah.
And now he's back to midfield, which is his natural position.
He played it, man. He played right back, left back, center back.
Right. He played everything.
Left mid, I think left and right mid. Yeah, he was the jack of all trades, man. Yeah, I played against him in the academy. He was incredible.
And that's the thing.
And he had right foot, left foot. Yeah, he was a good player.
And that's the thing people don't realize. A lot of these phenomenal players did not just
not play one position.
One position and get stuck in that one position.
Yeah.
A coach had a plan. I had a coach tell me, I can't remember who it was. I don't know if it was either on my podcast or a candid conversation with a coach. He had a player that says, give me 2 years. Give me 2 years to build a team. That's all he asked. Mm. Went to the parents, says, give me 2 years. The kid was 10. It's like, that's a lot of money to fork over to wait 2 years to see what you're going to do with my kid. So first he had to bring in a kid that he thought could play that defensive position.
Mm-hmm.
So they could push him up to be the center mid or center forward role.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the thing. It was that if the parents just gave him time, and they did, they gave him time. And now that kid went off to college and is playing in college right now. Wow. But they were told, give it time. But that player is one of the best offensive players, but it's not because they can strike the ball. It's because they can get back on defense so quickly.
And also playing different positions is just makes you more well-rounded, more spatially aware, like tactically aware of the game too. Because I played left, like my first game of Academy U16, I played literally number 10. And then the next game I played left back. But I didn't realize I was playing more of a left wing back, and one of my strengths was my speed. I was a natural lefty, and I was fast, and I was technical. So I would literally be on the touchline of, because we played a formation where I think it was two wing backs instead of having a natural left and right wing. We played wing backs, so it's like you go up and down.
Yeah, you're attacking.
Yeah, but you're literally like a left winger, and I thrived in that role. And I was like, at first, I was like, wow, I don't want to, like, you kind of get a little bit like, I don't want to play here. I should be number 10, and that's it. But I played the position, I was like, oh, wait, I'm actually getting the ball a lot, and I'm actually being more effective in this role than I was, because I'm wider, I'm in wider space, I'm able to go 1v1, I'm able to cross, I'm able to shoot. I'm like, well, this is actually, the coaches made that choice, and I had to go with it, and it ended up working out, you know?
I'm seeing that more and more in college. Before we talked, you played against Derek Waldeck.
Correct, at Stanford, yeah.
Yeah, and he plays a left attacking back. I've watched him play, we keep track, because he coached Landon for a bit.
Yeah.
We follow his USL.
Who does he play for now?
Knoxville.
Knoxville. I know a guy, Hinga Soleimani. He's a forward. He played for the national team. I know he plays for Knoxville.
And he plays that left wing attacking defender. And it's Derek tells me that's Landon's profile. That's him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like every coach.
Derek's a lefty.
He's a lefty, and he plays left back.
Yeah.
And he played left midfield wing. But he's phenomenal at defense. But he has speed getting up that line. For a while there, he was the number one place setter for USL.
He could cross the ball beautiful. I'm pretty sure he got an assist against us when we played on the Stanford. Yeah, he's a good player.
And that, but like watching him play, it's like, okay, I think that's key. It's not just me watching him, it's having Landon next to me.
Yeah.
Watching Derek and having that relationship with players. I think as these kids are growing up, now it's like you played professionally. If kids understood, like, look, your coach is not just someone that.
I'm not just some young kid. I like to come off with that, but yeah, I mean, I've done my stuff, you know.
If they have someone to admire and look up to, and have that real connection with the game, it changes it. And having that golden year time frame, I'm harping on that because I feel like that's the greatest influence you have on the game. So as you move on beyond the golden years, what do you work on with these players?
For high school age, it's just refining their technique. But it's kind of funny. Some players come to me like their golden years are when a little bit later because maybe they started later.
Right.
You know, so it's kind of like I'm kind of catching them up on some stuff. But, you know, some people have a desire to play in college. So it's just making it – for that age, I make it really black and white. Like I'm realistic. I say, hey, look, college is around the corner. What school do you think you can play at and get a scholarship? Because you gotta be realistic. If you haven't played soccer for a long time at a high level, SMU is really not gonna come calling. Or these top, you know, these top universities, they're going to go to get players who are playing national team level, MLS Next, ECNL, that have the experience. Like, what's the best fit for you? Can you get a scholarship? If you're looking for a scholarship, can you get one? Or can you just be like a contributing player on a college team? If that's your goal? You know what I mean? So when they get older, I like working with younger kids too. But older kids, you could really. They're almost closer to me in age, and I've been in that age too not too long ago. So I can kind of relate to them and say, hey, your future is now. Like, your future is not – you're not 14. You're 17. You're about to be out of the house in a year. You're about to be, you know, an adult. You're about to be the adult. So I keep it very, very black and white. I'm very, very blunt and honest. Not in a condescending way, but I'm like, hey, look, this is the situation you're in. What can you do from here? How can you contact your coaches? Are you contacting college coaches? Are you emailing them every day? Like when I was getting recruited, I would contact coaches like almost every day. I had my own separate email for just college coaches. So you got to be doing your homework, because how many other kids want to play in college?
Right.
Everybody, you know, so how are you going to be different from the next kid? You know, so.
CAP program with DKSC, I interviewed Daniel Dobson, and the advice he learned was to email on the same chain. If you email them once, always email them with that same email. Oh,
you just reply to it.
Just reply back to it. So they see that you've had correspondence instead of starting a new one. So they see that you have had...
Correct. Multiple conversations.
Multiple conversations.
It's not like a new... Yeah, that makes sense.
And I'm like, he goes, I just learned that. And he just learned it from the SMU coach at the time. And it was something that was said to him. It's like, oh my goodness, never would have thought of that. And I was like, now I've seen that multiple times now on these, some of these Facebook groups where they're actively trying to help families get athletes.
Yeah, there's
in general, scholarships. And that's what the whole Facebook group's about. And that was when someone said, I'm like, huh, it's getting around.
I follow this, I think it's like Sport, some 247 on Facebook. And they're like college recruiting. I followed him on Facebook. I think I'm part of the page I follow him, whatever. And they do a lot of that type of stuff, helping kids get scholarships. But, I mean, I think just doing – especially because I have that experience of playing Division I, like high Division I soccer, I have a lot of knowledge I want to give people. Like I said, free game. Like, I'm just giving you this information because, like, I've done it and it worked for me. This is how it could possibly work for you, you know?
Right.
If you put the work in. So, yeah, I'm always about helping people out, man, giving them my little nuggets of wisdom anytime I can.
So, now with your – with your academy, what do you call it?
It's just training. I mean, I guess it is. East Main Soccer Training. It's a training program, I guess you could say.
Now, do you have a, like some trainers have a start to finish program to, like, here's our game plan for the next 6 months. Do you personalize it? Do you have it set up? Like, if you come in at this point, this is the time frame we're working on. Or do you
for your players? No, I do everything individual, man. I don't ever, because every player is different. I don't ever say, we're going to work on this thing with every player because everyone comes to me. I got a guy who reached out to me yesterday and he said, we're at the point where my son's too good for rec, but we don't know what club to put him at. And we want to help you. We want you to work with him to get ready to play club. So they're kind of in a holding point, right?
Right.
So that is different from a player that comes to me that's already played for 10 years or is played in the academy for a long time. He's been
right.
All that. So I wouldn't do the same thing with him that I do with him.
But
so
do you line up like for the next someone like that because that's in between rec and club,
correct yeah.
Do you set up a program like this is the things that I'm seeing for my first evaluation or my several I understand like you have to take time like one evaluation like I always tell parents when they ask me like what is your process for trying out for a team I go six practices I go first first practice is the player getting comfortable just being there
correct
second one's hopefully bonding with the players third one is maybe bonding with the coach. I go, you might get a good feeling by the third practice, but the last three is really them just being comfortable in their own skin.
Yeah.
Playing with those group of kids. And I go, if a coach tells you, I want you off one practice, to me, that's a red flag.
I can see that.
And I go, it's because they're either A, filling numbers, or your kid's super talented, and they just want them. And I go, I've had both sides of that experience.
I never thought about it that way.
And I go, if a coach tells me, like, you need to come out a couple more times, I'm not offended.
Yeah.
Because as a coach, I had a two-practice requirement. Like, you have to come twice. Like, I have to get to know your player.
Yeah, first. Yeah, because you don't really know them after.
And they're nervous. They're going to make a ton of mistakes. And if they know that I'm not going to get mad at them and I'm not going to judge them off a ton of mistakes, and they can come out and then be comfortable playing with me the second and maybe the third time.
Yeah.
I know that they will be
a good contributor.
If they're actually improving every time they're coming out. It's not because they're improving because of me, because I can't do that much in three practices.
Yeah.
But in six practices, I get to see how they're contributing, how they're communicating with kids, how they are bonding with the other kids. Because correct. If they aren't doing a bond, we talked about the friendship.
Yeah.
They might not be a good fit.
Yeah.
And you just can't throw a kid, especially older kids, into that equation.
Yeah. I never thought about it that way as far as it's like some people want answers fast. They want like, are we good? What do you think about the first pack? What do you think about? Because I mean, I think I don't even remember for me. Because I moved from one club to Solar, but I don't even remember. I think our whole team went over there. I don't even remember. That was a long time ago, man. But I've always been like, I say blessed to be with the same club my whole life. So I never had to try out. So that's kind of something it's kind of unknown to me. Because whenever parents ask me like, how many practices is enough? I'm like, I really don't know. Like, you know, I don't know because I never really experienced that. To the point where I have to like, I never jumped clubs. I was with the club my whole life, basically. So
Landon has played with Stig and Solar.
Yeah.
Only two clubs he's played for, but he's played for one Stig and Solar, and he's played for, I mean, one team in Sting, and his fifth team in Solar in 2 years.
Oh, wow.
And it's, or four teams in Solar. And one was because one was a two-coach system. They had an A and B team, one coach B team, one coach B team. But there was a real divide in talent. And we're like, oh, he'll move up, and we have to wait until the 6 months are up. It's still the academy level, and he'll move up.
Yeah.
Okay. And then I won't say who it is, but we don't kiss the ring. We don't
Yeah.
But I expect Landon to be a well-behaved and well-contributor to a team.
Yeah.
And so it's like one of the parents asked me, who was the team manager, goes, what are you guys doing? I go, we haven't been told what we've been going to be doing with the coach yet, so we're on the look.
Yeah.
I said it just like that to the team manager. He goes, what? And literally the coach came over after the game and says, well, he's not good for us. I'm like, oh, we kind of figured since you haven't given us an answer.
Yeah.
And he's practiced with you. And it's like, but Landon was a middle of the player team player on that team. Like, he was not a playmaker, so to speak, or a goal maker, but he contributed quite a bit to that team,
helped
them grow, but he didn't feel part of that team either.
Yeah.
And then we were thrown in with another coach that was not a fit, but we signed a 6-month commitment and we didn't know how we could handle it. So Landon, if it wasn't for Derek in that time frame, Landon probably would have not developed as well of soccer and find that love for the game again. And Derek was, I say, it's his saving grace for the game.
Yeah.
And
hey, man, that's one person could, like I said, like,
it could change. Why I asked so many questions about your relationship with these players.
These
golden years, and you talk about how you learned to work with them.
Yeah.
And then he played for a coach. He played for him for a year, and it wasn't a right fit for Landon. It wasn't the right coaching style. Landon needs someone a little bit more abrasive and riding him a little bit more.
Yeah.
Not letting him get away with silly stuff. And we have a coach right now that's like that, and we'll see how it goes for a year. And
It's tough.
And now we're into a year contract, so we have no say.
But okay, is this his first year? Oh, he's in select now.
He's in select
now. Yeah, they get that July 1st. They get back then.
And it's all about, but at the same time, I went and asked several different coaches about this coach that I knew. I'm like, if I had a kid, this is who you'd be playing with.
Yeah.
And it's I have questions for him now after going through a tournament, but I still also have to let the season progress. And because the players are so new to each other, but there are things that are popping up in my head, but that's, if they aren't, there's something wrong with me as a parent.
You
should always be looking out for what's best interest for our player, maybe not jumping teams, but getting the answers. I mean, I expect my son to go ask questions. Me as a parent, I have to ask questions to understand what his game plan is. Because there's nothing wrong with the style of coaching he has. His coaching style is phenomenal, how he interacts with the kids. I gave him credit when I interviewed him. And it's like, you get frustrated like a parent out there. These kids are like your kids. I go, that's nice to see.
It's true. It means you care. Means you care about their best interests. You know, you got, like, if, you gotta always have that fire in your belly too, just as much as the kids have it. Cause
our job is to look at it from a parent perspective and long-term perspective and not the player perspective, because if the player is getting development, maybe my viewpoint is not correct.
Right.
It's just because my ego's hurt because my kid's not a starter, or my kid is not playing the position I want him to play, or whatever it may be. And it's like, that's where you have to take the side step. But my issue is, like I said, it's like I have expectations. And I have,
definitely should.
But that's the thing. Like, and you get to kind of sidestep that right now. Are your goals to eventually coach, or do you currently coach a team, or?
I haven't thought about that too far in advance. I would like to maybe coach maybe high school or in college, maybe. I haven't really thought that far in advance. I mean, for right now, I love what I do because I'm able to develop relationships with kids. That's like what I'm trying to do. So I would say, that's my goal right now, is just to see where this goes. Continue investing, maybe doing some things outside of soccer with my business too. Maybe because I kind of want to start. I actually kind of want to start my own podcast too. Maybe do a nonprofit. That's kind of one of my long term goals. So yeah, I have some other things outside of, like I said, my brand is my brand. It's not a soccer brand. So I kind of have some other things I want to do. Kind of still in the works. So
with your brand, you talked to, I put down earlier, it was One Me, and it kind of stuck with me because it was, how do I describe it? We were talking.
You talking about my brand name?
You talked about C Smitty, but you said One Me. You said, I put it.
Oh, one of one.
One of one.
Yeah, right? One of me. Yeah, okay, yeah.
One of me. There's the word I was missing.
One of me. Yeah.
And
or one of one. Yeah.
And that's your brand. So you have your brand. So I view your brand, that's what I've seen of it outside of the soccer side of it.
Yeah.
Is very much giving back to the community. I went back on one day and just searched your name, and
how many times
it showed up and everything you gave back.
Yeah.
Which is very rare because you're an individual giving back.
Yeah.
My train of thought is, where's this? If one individual can do all this, and I'm assuming you're not making bank and you're not some hidden millionaire.
Yeah. I'm going to do good for myself. I'm not a millionaire, though. Not even close.
No, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, for sure.
It's that you're able to do this. Why aren't our clubs not doing this? Why aren't our coaches are in a different place than the clubs, but they're able to do this. I know that several clubs give back, but they don't publicize it now. Like I have a hard time with our MLS team. For as much as they want to fill those seats, I had a coach recently tell me if they really wanted to fill those seats, community outreach would do 10 times more marketing than those drone shows. I mean, those drone shows, don't get me wrong, are phenomenal. But But getting them out, it's like I found out to be a dream team at FC Dallas is $3,000 or $5,000 to walk out with the players on the field. And it goes to I think if I'm not mistaken, to their foundation. But why are they charging it these families to come out to raise money for their foundation? Why not go out and ask a business to sponsor the dream team?
Right. That's what I do. I sponsor a lot of the North Texas ones.
Right. And it's like I already have families that are complaining about struggling paying their league fees and their coaching fees. I'll probably say half the kids that I've been around, families are well enough off to afford it.
Correct. Yeah. It's expensive. Means. Yeah.
But $6,000 for a year of soccer is not cheap.
Yeah.
I mean, then to ask for even more on beyond that. I mean, that's the first year. Maybe the second year, if they aren't buying kits, it's $1,000 less.
Yeah, you got. If you get off Facebook Marketplace, Facebook Marketplace is so funny. They were like, I have all these Stink stuff or Solar stuff. I'm selling it on the low. And like, I bet people make like people have. Like, oh, I want to buy it. You know,
because they realize it's no longer good.
Yeah, and they have a whole new sponsorship deal.
A whole new kit year.
But I mean, like that comes down to like. I always say like heart posture, like where's your heart? Like what's the overarching theme or what's the word I'm trying to say?
What's the end goal?
Yeah, what's your purpose of like what's your mission statement right. for the club? And it's hard because when you have a lot of moving parts, you have a big club with a lot of moving parts, it could be hard to come up with like a why are we really doing this thing? I don't know. But since it's individually and it's just me, now I have like a team too. But I know that, like, I made this brand. I know this could be a ton of stuff. I made this brand first, like, for me and for people to see, like, who I am as a person, too.
Right.
And I want to be known as someone who's generous. Like, that's one of my biggest things in life. Like, if I'm able to make a pretty good money, like, if I'm not giving it back, what is this really about? You know, like, if people are investing in me and I'm doing something to invest back into them, I'm just taking and taking and taking. I want to be somebody who's a giver and, like,
right.
gives back and wants to do it. So I mean, it's a hard thing for me, man. Like, I just think it's the right thing to do. And especially as a believer in Christ, like, I think it's something that, you know, God will want me to do. And I want to be somebody who's showing that to the community, you know? So,
right.
I
understand.
But I get what you mean. It's hard for, I guess if you have a club and there's a lot of people involved, a lot of big decision makers, it could be hard. It could be harder to, I don't know.
Even with inside the club, it's mentorship. I mean,
yeah,
I, when I coached, it was the big thing. It was, why aren't we having older kids, U14, U15 kids, coming down to the 6-7-year-olds and being mentors? Like taking one player per team and coming, and then that team will go support that player when they have a game. Or
yeah, we used to do that whenever we went. So whenever we went select, we had like a pin. It's like kind of like a rite of passage. So all the under 18s, the graduating teams would come and pin every single solar player. Like, okay. We're leaving it to you now. We're leaving the club. Right. Like, you're the new select kids to, like, keep the club going. So we did that, like a rite of passage type of thing.
I think it'd be great to see. I mean, like, what you're doing in the community, it's like you're giving away cleats. You're giving away tickets. You're giving away – and it's not always – I don't know who gets the tickets. I don't always pay attention to them. Do a deep dive on them. If they need them or if they can afford them.
Yeah.
That's – but the idea of what you're trying to do in the community and make a change –
yeah,
it's phenomenal. I mean, it's funny because now I pay even more attention to that type of stuff.
Oh yeah, now people could be texting me like, "Hey, the cleats still available?" I'm like, "No, they're gone, bro."
But you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
It's not seen, and that is something that I feel like what you're doing in the community goes beyond the game. We talked about that in the beginning. It was you have to go beyond the game to play the game.
Correct. Like the game is like a vessel. The game gets you there, but what you do, that gets you in the door. Like,
right.
But whenever now you're in the door, now how are you going to use the game to now impact people and to change lives and to do what you want to do, you know? So that's why I do that, because now I do have a strong influence because, like, I played it at a high level, and that's kind of what got me into the door. Now it's like, okay, I have this impact. how do I now like mainstream that to people who need it? Like, how can I help people out, you know,
and stuff like that. Out of curiosity, because you do have kind of a catchy logo, C. Smitty.
Yeah.
Are you going to do like a clothing line, like that type of stuff?
Oh, I have merch right now. Like,
I see your polo.
Yeah, I mean, I do, man. I do a lot of stuff, really, just for me. But I mean, I've given away,
or even candidates for teams or things along that line. Like, just
out there. I mean, I've done shirts. I've done hoodies. I've done bucket hats. I started doing bucket hats. Water bottles. Like, I have. Whenever I have my camps, I do it's called the C. Smitty Best 11.
Mm-hmm.
So I give away. It's like, you know how you have like a best 11 at the Europe best 11?
Right.
So that's kind of how my match. Man of the match. Yeah, I have that. So it's like the best 11 players in my camp, they get like, usually like it's a water bottle, a shirt, a hat, C. Smitty hat. So I kind of, it's good for advertising. I say, hey, what makes you work at the school? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
To give me up. But anyway, I just kind of get my brain out there that way. But as far as merch, clothing line, I mean, I haven't gotten too deep into that. But I just buy it just to advertise it. I have my Seasoning soccer balls. I have my balls I get from Amazon. Then I had a guy who put my logo on the soccer balls, actually.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So that's kind of what I do.
I didn't realize this. I guess I didn't. Like I said, I try not to do too much research. So you have camps with your.
Oh, yeah. I have summer camps. I have winter camps, like spring break, stuff like that. So what I do is it's all like technique based.
How long is it? Like a 2-hour camp?
It's a 3-hour camp for 4 days. And so we have. Certain days we do certain things, and then the last day we do like a 3v3 tournament.
Okay.
And then we kind of give out prizes and.
Do you do long? Have you ever thought about doing full day camps, or is that just?
Oh no! No! Hey, 3 hours you add in my nah. Like people ask me that, and I'm like 3 hours. Deal with a kid for 9 to 5. I don't know about that, man. Like that's.
I
a
just
lot.
Ask because I like because for me as a family, it's. We use camp kind of like a daycare.
No, yeah, no, I get you, yeah.
Because we'll send him off to, I'll use FC Dallas. Like, we'll send him off to FC Dallas. Yeah. I'm in the office of the 7 hours he's there. I'm in the office for 5.5 hours.
Yeah.
But I don't have to worry about him for 5.5 hours.
Yeah.
It's like during the summer, that's what we do. We send him to soccer camp. Like,
yeah.
He picks what camps he wants, and half of them are soccer camps. This past year, he went to TCU, UNT,
yeah,
FC
yeah.
Dallas.
Yeah,
soccer camps, and did one other one I can't remember. Oh, Villarreal's.
Yeah,
my daughter plays for them, so he gets to go.
Yeah,
be part of it. But he had 5 weeks, 6 weeks of soccer camps this summer, and majority of them are full day camps.
Yeah,
and I should say FC Dallas and UNT and TCU are all full day.
Yeah.
But they have huge organizations that are running them.
Inside
of part of their college.
Yeah, they have a lot more. It was like, how would I entertain a kid for that long? That's the thing. Like, you got to, like, because I know some, they go, like, watch movies and all that. I'm like, hey, we're 3 hours of soccer, then at lunch, come 12 o'clock, I'm like, yo,
we've done some at Blue Skies. And
Yeah.
I think that's a little easier because they're indoors. They're
exactly.
In the heat, and they can get in, have lunch, then go play. What they would do is they would do technical training in the morning. In the afternoon, they'll apply that technical training. Like, they'll play games, but if they aren't doing what they're worked on in the morning, they'll stop it and reapply it in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Type of thing. So they
all of our stuff is like we have to like make it competition. It's all like competition, and we make sure we have like the team, the ages, and the right age. We have enough coaches for each kid to make sure they're getting enough attention from the coaches. So yeah, we make it to where kids are having fun, but they're also competing and understanding that if you want to win something, you got to work to get
right.
it. Yeah, so that's why we do that, and it's been really successful. We've had a lot of kids come. And we try to make it fun, though, man. We try to make it fun, but we also want to make, you know, kids work, you know.
No, they have to.
You got
to
work, man. You got
to
work.
This whole medal for every little thing you do needs to end.
Yeah, no. When I first started, I did that. When I first started, I would give everyone, like, I remember I would get, like, Chick-fil-A gift cards. And then I was like, no, we can't do that anymore, man.
I think certain things, like, when I coached, we did the men of the match every game.
But
we were giving them like a size, we're moving from size 3 soccer balls to a size 4 soccer ball.
Yeah.
So we got them all size 4 soccer ball because that means parents didn't have to buy it.
Yeah, exactly.
And then like the first year we did it, we did skill balls. And so all the kids got a skill ball by the end of the season or whatever it was. By the end of the season because it's only 4v4. You only play 8 games. And
all right.
You
had
a roster of 7 or 8 kids. it was more of prepping them to give them something to work with or moving on to the next progression of soccer versus just random. But I mean, we would highlight what they did well in that game, and we would try very hard to, it wasn't just randomly until you got to the last person, a few people, but even then, like, you would find something to give them credit for. And I feel like that in sports maybe not giving them something, but recognizing kids for their achievements in in the moment.
It's so very important because, I mean, kids remember that. I remember I went to a basketball camp when I was in Miami. I used to be in Miami, and I got Camper of the Week. I don't have that trophy, but I still remember that moment in my life when I got it. You know, you don't, kids don't ever forget that. And it just shows you that you can tangibly hold the trophy, like, thing. This is literally a testament to my hard work.
Right.
You know, or medal or a shirt or whatever, a hat. It's like a tangible object you can hold. That's why I think it's a good way to give those people something, so they know that, hey, you didn't get, I didn't just give it to you, you earned it, you know? So it makes you earn stuff. So I think that's good that we do that for kids.
Now, where can we find all this information at?
So imcsmitty.com. It's lowercase imcsmitty. That's my website. On Instagram, it's imcsmitty. On YouTube, I think it's just Caleb Smith. But if you look up C Smitty Soccer Training on YouTube, all my videos come up. But it's under my actual name.
Awesome.
And then Facebook, yeah, my Facebook is at C Smitty. It's a Facebook page. Yeah, but follow me on Instagram. If you want, like, I have all my videos. I like, it's my Instagram is my most, like,
right.
It has all my videos, everything. I like, yeah. So I would say follow my Instagram.
And follow your Instagram. So now I always ask, who has been your greatest influence as a player, and who has been your greatest influence as a coach? I mean, it could be anyone. It could be your parent. It could be
you mean a player, as in
when you played the game in collegiate and down.
Oh, I get what you're saying.
And then, who has been your greatest influence since you've been coaching that has molded to shape you to who you are through all this process?
Oh, okay.
It could be multiple people. I mean, yeah, I've had long my answers
parents.
For this.
As a player, my parents, for sure. I mean, they knew before I knew I was good, and they. Yeah, they're my rock, honestly. They're two of the most important people in my life. Especially because they allow me to fail and allow me to get up and go again. They didn't say, it's okay, like, you know, like, if you fail, you gotta get up and go again, right? They were very real and honest with me. And they let me pursue soccer. Like, they just loved seeing me play. And they said, if you wanna do it, you do it. We'll support you every moment of the way, but we're not gonna get in the way of you, we're not gonna do anything. So I think them providing me with that just streamline of, like, this is what you want to do. You can do it. It's your life. It's your life, not our life. But who else? My most influential coach is Adrian Sokol, for sure. He was the main reason why I was able to go to SMU, able to go to the national team. Taught me everything I knew about the game. So he's been my coach literally since I moved here, just about. All of them until I graduated. So he's an incredible guy.
He has a lot of effect on a lot of players.
Oh yeah, everybody knows Adrian Sokol. He's a great guy. I mean, he looks out for the best interests of each player. And yeah, as a coach, honestly, this may be weird, but I would say, like, my players inspire me. Like, my players inspire me to because I've even had players where they're so new and they don't know the game, but, like, the best thing for me is seeing them grow. I'm like, wow, you were at this moment, you were at this stage, and now you're here. That's the biggest, my biggest, like, smile on my face when I see that. So I would say kids. Kids inspire me to be better. And kids teach you a lot. Kids are smart. Kids are, like, really smart. So they teach me new things. They, you know, even they correct me sometimes. If I do something wrong, they correct me. And I'm like, wow, thank you, you know. Right. I'm never too... like, too good to be like, you listen to everything I say, that's it. Like, no, like, you, they teach you, and you teach them, and they teach you too. So I would say the kids I train inspire me, for sure.
That's awesome. Yeah. Thank you.
Hello, listeners. I hope you all enjoyed this episode of Chat by the Pitch. Caleb is a remarkable young man for being so young. He has so much knowledge and foresight and gratitude and generosity that most players should want to be like. Now, if you listen to what he said in part one and part two, there's a message that he talked about. And I think you guys didn't catch it, go back and try to find it. He talks about finding yourself, one of thyself. And that every player is their own unique person, that your player is them. They have to be the best player they are, not comparing it to someone else, because at the end of the day, you're competing against yourself to improve. If there's no improvement in your player competing against themselves, they can't compete to the next level against someone else. and second part of this message, I feel like it's so important that he talked about, is finding yourself. As parents, we need to find ourselves. As players that we help raise and bring up, or if you are a player listening to this, learning who you are outside of your activity. Now, as adults, we go through this identity issue, going from childhood to adulthood, and us as parents have to help our players go through that. And if you're a player, you have to learn that you're more than just the activities you are doing. There's more to you as an individual. Caleb amplifies this and shows this on a huge level. He just doesn't talk the talk. He walks the walk. He shares his success with others. He shares cleats, going out and getting them, shares FC Dallas tickets. He sponsors dream teams with North Texas. There is so many little small things he does that is absolutely amazing that he actually does what he does. And I think we need to have our players figure out who they are. He knows who he is. Had to go through many trials to figure that out. We as parents can help our players now find themselves. And if you're a player listening to this, write down who you are and exclude soccer from the equation or your activities from the equation and see if who you are aligns with who you want to be. Now, parents, if you're listening to this, he is a great role model. And if you're looking for a one-on-one coach, I would highly recommend him. Listening to other people talk about who he is and how he coaches is absolutely amazing. Now, I feel like I get a little bit more of an insight of these coaches and these people who I interview, but I also go do my homework afterwards. And Caleb is the example in this episode. Take your time. Do your homework. Figure out who your player is going to be around. Players, figure out who you want to be around. Make sure your support system is strong. I talked about Matt Montaigne's episode about how he has a keeper's union. Remember that you're only as strong as the people you surround yourself with. So that being said, figure it out. Try to find a way to elevate yourself. If you really like this podcast, please give me a review, give me some stars, whatever it may be on the review side, and share this podcast with as many people. Thank you so much. Until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.